Welcome back. Merry Christmas. Happy to have you here with us. I am Cy Kellett, and this is Catholic Answers Live. And we are reviewing the year 2018 a bit with Todd and Tim, Todd Agliolaro, Tim Ryland, and in order, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers and the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine. Well, there's a lot of, I mean, I guess with any year, news, why is news bad news? There's really not, it's not news, I guess, if it's good news, is it? Well, I mean, there is the good news then.
No news is good
news. As a Catholic, you shouldn't.
Good news travels fast.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other cliches on the news that we can hit before we
get? An obscure Woody Allen reference there that Todd gets, but most
you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. How about that?
Your turn. Okay.
I'm trying to think of a Woody Allen line, I can't. All I can remember is the Woody Allen joke. This is from very early in his career about how he took his wife on their honeymoon, and he was water skiing.
That's right.
Do you remember that one?
I do.
And she was exhausted from all the rowing.
All the rowing, yeah. She was in front. She was rowing furiously as I was skiing.
thank you for saving me on that one. A couple of other things this year. Billy Graham died. Did you know that? I wasn't sure how as a Catholic to respond to that, but we were laudatory, not gushing.
Not gushing, okay, because that's reserved for...
That's reserved for Catholics.
Catholic book editors.
But the truth is Billy Graham probably started out pretty anti-Catholic, but got over it. Does that seem correct to you?
Just based on time and place.
You would think so.
Seems like, yeah.
That's right.
But I don't know.
Yeah. But he sure knew how to... evangelize, brought a lot of people to Christ.
He did. He seemed like a very Christian man, a very strong faith.
Yeah. There didn't seem to be anything phony about Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
But so we marked his passing this year. We also had a youth synod this year. I hardly noticed it. I feel terrible about saying that because I know a synod is a big deal to a Catholic. It just seemed completely out of place. It seemed like the wrong year to have it. I know that the cardinal. The Archbishop of Philadelphia?
Yeah, he's not. Chaput is not.
Not a cardinal?
No.
Los Angeles, Philadelphia, what's up? He's just an archbishop,
yeah.
But he said, just postpone it. Yeah. We'll talk about something else at that. I thought that was sensible. I don't know. These things have these incredible lead times. It's like putting on the Olympics or something
right.
to have these synods. But I don't have that much to say about it because it just seemed to come and go.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed out of time. It seemed like this is not the right time to be doing this. Either of you?
Well, when they have a synod on geezers, I'll be a lot more tuned into that.
By the time they do, you'll be a geezer.
What made it worth following for me as a kind of spectator with popcorn thing, if only that, was suspicions that that some of its outcomes are being predetermined by Vatican machinations and kind of stealthy skulking around kind of things going on in Rome. I don't know what kind of truth there is to that, but at any rate, the speculations about that some of its reports had been essentially pre-drafted or that there were ideologues on the margins of it, controlling it, that had designs on what it was going to say in the end. So just from a kind of an X-Files point of view, it made it fun to watch. But I don't know of anyone in our, you know, in my Catholic world who was waiting to hear what wise prescriptions it was going to come up with
for
Catholic youth.
Yeah. Right. It didn't seem to have any kind of like, oh, well, why when this gets settled, this will be fascinating what they come up with. It kind of, well, all right. I guess they do. They come and go. And if I may, for a moment, just defend stealthy skulking around. The church was governed for centuries, maybe a millennium, by stealthy skulking around, and it worked great.
Yeah, you can't knock it.
Those were the good times. think everything was out in the open when St. Pope Pius X was there. It was the Italians were running it, and they did a great job running it. Am I wrong?
The Italians don't do a great job running much, and I say that as one, so don't send any letters, please. You know that old joke about heaven and hell, right, Cy?
No, I do not. What is it?
That in heaven... the French are the chefs, the Italians are the lovers, the British are the policemen, and the whole thing is organized by the Germans.
Oh.
And in hell, the Germans are the chefs, the French are the policemen, the British are the lovers, and the whole thing's organized by the Italians.
So, poor yeah. British. Yeah. yeah. That seems very mean-spirited to the British. Yeah. They were never short of heirs in Britain. As a matter of fact, one of the problems in Britain, too many heirs to the throne.
That's a fair point, yeah.
So they did their share of begetting. Okay, so the elephant in the room, I don't know if the McCarrick story came this year. I had heard myself in about a decade and a half ago, someone who was kind of a church insider say about then Archbishop McCarrick when he was appointed in Washington, that he was a careerist. That's right. And then this year, all this sexual stuff came out and somebody said, or several people said, well, everybody knew. And I thought, I don't know who everybody is. I don't know that everybody did know. Is there a different kind of everybody? It did seem that there were, you had heard things about Cardinal McCarrick. And I'm not saying this to share rumors. I don't think they're rumors anymore. So let's just get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I found the charge of everybody knew odd. But there is some kind of everybody knew, because how did this happen that a serial sexual abuser and misuser of his power became really at the top of the American Catholic Church without some folks knowing?
It's
you guys take a minute to scratch your heads. I can see
it's a real moral quandary. I know it's I have a background in journalism and newspapers, and I know that there were reporters that had the goods on him, but no one would go on record. And you cannot write saying, I've heard this about this. People need to go on the record. I think it was Rod, if I'm not mistaken.
Rod Dreher?
Rod Dreher. Yeah. Had been on his trail for 15, 17 years, and he even had written stuff going as far as he could and had an editor kill it and say, we're not going to run this.
We can't run this because nobody will...
Yeah. So imagine, I mean, think he's left the church now.
He's practicing Orthodox.
But imagine his frustration over the years, like knowing this stuff and knowing that other people knew this stuff, and yet somehow, because of the way our society works, the way journalism works, the way the church works, it went on and on. And I can't imagine many, many, many people didn't know about it. That's just boggles the imagination to think that.
Well, it came out because the Archdiocese of New York an investigation was given to about something in New Jersey that came under the jurisdiction of the cardinal in New York.
Right.
And then he said, this is credible. And that's when, once you have a cardinal say, this is credible stuff, then stuff starts to move.
Yeah, there seemed to be a tipping point there somewhere. Who knows what else might have been going on behind the scenes, too, if there was. So the answer to why... if so many knew, why wasn't anything done, is probably a complex one.
Yeah.
I've heard it alleged that then Cardinal McCarrick was a really accomplished diplomat as well as fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he was good at what he did in many ways on the surface, and if he was a financial asset, it's not surprising that he might have defenders or people willing to look the other way.
Yeah.
Personal friendships do go a long way with that too. But whatever it was that happened there when the story did break in New York was enough to get the dominoes falling, I guess.
That is an awful long time for the dominoes to fall. And it's not a matter of, well, they left him, you know, in his job and nobody disturbed him. I mean, the man moved up and up and up in the church while these things were happening. I just think it's absolute consternation on the part of the laity. Mm-hmm. What happened here? And I guess my point is you still don't have an answer to that question. We're months removed from that, 6 months, at least 7, 8 months maybe, from these revelations.
It's the same question we asked. We could have asked ourselves about Maciel 20 years ago.
Oh, that's a very good point.
And he – he got the blessing of John Paul II, whom we all hold in the highest regard.
Right.
So it seems so clear to us in hindsight, but a combination of a lot of the things that I mentioned, plus just a kind of disbelief. I like to tell myself that John Paul II, it simply never even entered into his mind that there could be truth to the things that we later found out were true about Maciel.
Yeah.
I find that excuse a little less credible as time goes on and as we become more cynical about sexual misconduct by clergy.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a if you were to chart it out in the 50s, maybe it was unthinkable because there was a presumption of holiness and of good conduct.
Yeah.
And of rectitude overall, and now we're at a point where the slightest whisper ends your ecclesiastical career.
Right. So John Paul's reign as pontiff comes right in the middle of that trajectory.
Yeah, and I think at a real changeover point. Look what just happened in Los Angeles, the auxiliary bishop there, Salazar, who has resigned, I believe, and he hasn't had any kind of process. There's nothing more than allegations. I don't know if they're true or if they're false. But you see that the tripwire there, the mechanism springs into action to remove him from his post based on allegations. And then you're seeing too with the church cooperating with attorneys general over the country. Illinois is the latest now to come out with a report that's pretty damning. And so maybe we'll never go back to where you could have a real charlatan like Maciel. Mm-hmm. Professing sanctity but having a real sordid personal life, and that's a good thing. So we may be more in the loss of trust that we have, but if that fails to provide cover for people like him in the future, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. I still don't feel like people have a bead on how bad is it, though. I mean, are there? You know, I don't know how many ordinaries there are in the United States, 150, 170, something like that. Ordinary being the bishop of a diocese. But I'm sure there are people who will say 80% of them are living a homosexual lifestyle actively and promoting priests and committing sacrilege and all that. That seems utterly unlikely to me. I can't say, you know, I remember a very prominent person saying he had a moral certainty, someone I really trusted, a moral certainty that Father Maciel was a holy man. He said, I don't have any proof, but I've even gotten to the point where I'm shy about using the word moral certainty. Like, you just feel like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. But it seems tremendously unlikely that it would be that bad.
Yeah.
But it also seems tremendously unlikely that it's just McCarrick. And we're not getting the whole story.
Well, you look at these news reports in the past, and they tend to sort of graph along the same lines as the secular world, right? Like, they're 4-5% of men are, you know, molesters. Well, then they 4-5% of the priesthood, maybe. I mean, that seems to have is how it falls out. Now you don't know. I mean, the 80% is a little outrageous, but because of this, you know, this I don't know what to call it, but the homosexual element that's been prevalent in the church, and now these are not just allegations from some far right winger. These are people. You know, cardinals in the church now saying the same thing. Maybe that graph's higher.
The Pope himself has said it.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe that graph's higher. Maybe it's not just the same ill at the same percentage in society at large as in the church. Maybe it's higher in the church, and that's very, very troubling.
Yes, right. But it's just like the place where you're going to find child molesters is where there are children. It may well be that the place where you're going to find homosexual men is where there's men. I mean, and there's a lot of men in the priesthood. As a matter of fact, it's 100% thus far.
So far. Well, that highlights another point I wanted to make about the McCarrick thing is that as horrific as it is, it involved adult men. I mean, it was certainly abuse of his power.
What brought him down was the allegation that there was a teenager involved. And this gets back to why nothing was done, and I'm forgetting where I read these things, but there were there were comments. I forget if they were from clergy or from observers that once it was shown that there was a minor involved, then we had to spring into action. So seminarians which made up perhaps the bulk of McCarrick's victims, if you want to call them victims, which makes sense to me. Adult seminarians seemed not to get the same level of concern that eventually a 14-year-old or 15-year-old boy.
That's
did.
The thing that – that's the straw.
Right.
Yeah, and that itself is kind of troubling that we would say, well, as long as there's nothing illegal going on, then we can look the other way because on balance it's better to have a Cardinal McCarrick doing his job than not.
We have to take a break. I would like both of you to solve this, please, and put the church back on solid, holy, pure grounds, or at least give us a suggestion of a way forward. You can still save lots until midnight at shop.catholic.com because our Christmas sale continues because it's still Christmas in the Catholic Church. 30% off hundreds of books, CDs, DVDs. Just go to shop.catholic.com and use that promo code CALIVE18.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
The Church has 2,000 years of wisdom to share on what it takes to live life gracefully.
We're so overwhelmed by how much our faith has transformed our marriage and family especially. We want everyone to experience the incredible gift that the Catholic vision of life and love really is.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Tomorrow morning, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're reviewing the year 2018. We continue with that with the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, Tim Ryland, and with the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers and the editor of the finest book of 2018, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humana Vitae. That would be Todd Aguilaro. The year in review does become a little bit tedious towards the middle of the year because it's just one thing after another. Enough on McCarrick, I suppose. But it strikes me that there are some radical ideas being thrown around. Some people there were a whole bunch of competing petitions for a while. There's the idea, don't support your local parish. There's lay councils thrown out there as ideas. My own critique would be none of them are radical enough. I mean, I don't think a lay council is a radical idea. I think it's a very modern idea to put on an ancient church. But I've even heard it suggested, look, why don't we go back to bishops don't move. Once you're put in made the bishop of a diocese, you stay there for life. That would take the careerism element out of it. And two, why don't we let the local clergy elect the bishops? And like has been done many times in the past in the church, and then let the Pope either affirm the election or say no, find somebody else. Are you guys thinking in those radical terms, or are you waiting to see what happens next February when there's a big meeting, or waiting for this to blow over so you can go back to doing what you like doing, or what?
That would be nice. Now, I mean, those two solutions you mentioned are both things that I've heard, again, to refer to some of my Eastern Catholic friends who would like to see more localized exercise of authority in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just from maybe now synodality is the hot word, but you think of subsidiarity, which I'm not quite sure what the difference between those two things is. Maybe synodality is just subsidiarity applied to church governance, but it seems to have a lot of merit to it on the surface. I wonder how it would look in practice, though.
Yeah. All right. Tim? Ryland? No, you're just going to meditate upon this? You have nothing to say?
Yeah, I'm waiting for it all to blow over.
Yeah. I don't believe that. Well, I mean, it is hard to know what to do. I mean, we have recourse to the things we've always had recourse to, prayer and fasting and all that. And people are doing that. It's not done nothing. Right. That's an important thing.
Absolutely.
But
But we have to try. I think we have to try something, right? In other words, if you have a big problem, let's try something. And that certainly seems to me anyway to be a reasonable starting point. Is to subsidiarity has been long been part of the Catholic thought. Social thought. So as Todd says, why not apply it to the governance of the church?
I wonder though how, just if I could speak off the top of my head, I wonder how localized election of bishops, I wonder if that would really solve the careerism problem. It would solve, I guess, strictly speaking, the problem of careerism because you wouldn't have more advancement after that.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be angling for a major diocese. But it would seem to me to politicize Episcopal elections maybe just as much as it is now, if not more. Would you have campaigning?
Oh, yeah.
There'd probably be all kinds of, just like there is now, exercise of favoritism and power brokering and that sort of thing, just on a smaller level. So I'm not sure that, at least on the surface, that gets to the heart of things.
Well, let me throw you out another one I heard, see what you think. The dioceses are too big. This is not what the church has ever looked like before. Dioceses of 4, 5, 10 million people. Mm. Bishops have no chance of knowing everything that's going on. Just take the deaneries and make each one of them its own diocese.
Yeah, that's got a lot of merit to it too. The expression that you just used, that bishops can't know their people.
Yeah.
And bishops have become corporate middle managers rather than pastors and teachers, which is what they're called to be. So if we had 10 times as many bishops as we have now, first of all, it would slightly reduce the grandeur maybe of the Episcopal office, and that might be a good thing for some bishops.
Right.
And it would allow more local control. It would allow more more personal contact between the bishop and his flock.
Right.
I think
confirmation season would be way easier.
That's right. But on a practical level, you have all these enormous diocesan bureaucracies and chanceries and enormous budgets that they administer. It would take some time to break all that down.
Yeah, it would. That's true.
So there's a practical obstacle there, it seems to me.
Right, and you don't want to lose bureaucracy. Once you built it up, you don't want to scrape away.
You spent all that time.
Yeah, you took all those decades building it up. You don't want to break that right down. Does the name Vigano mean anything to you? Do you recall Archbishop Vigano?
Isn't that what opera singers sing when they're
Vigano, Vigano, yeah, Vigano. Right? Yeah, that might be it. But no, Tim Ryland.
Sorry.
That is not it. Mm. We got the whole McCarrick thing, but this is followed. And I have to say, the Pope went to Ireland. All right. Ireland needed a visit from the Pope. The Pope probably needed to visit with some Irish people. it's good for him good for them. It's a tough situation. He knew that and he went there, made the best of it. Right in the middle of that, Archbishop Vigano comes out with a letter accusing the Pope, the current Pope, of having promoted McCarrick in a way. I mean, he didn't promote him in terms of an office, but promoted him in terms of influence and
having knowledge of his
right. Yeah, despite having knowledge of
his actions,
what
right.
happened. Yeah, what do you make of that?
Well, damning if true, and so there have been subsequent letters from him, and there have been letters to him from his critics, and there's been a bit of a back and forth. Certainly, it is the allegation that McCarrick's actions were known, and that despite them, he was not only not disciplined but was put in positions of influence, seems consistent with what we were talking about a few minutes ago about this everybody knew belief.
Right, right.
So that's not those are certainly compatible. One of those things that you say, well, if all that's true, boy, that explains a lot. And then the other side of your mind says, boy, I sure hope it's not because.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I'm suspicious of a little bit of it's also convenient for those who see Francis as the enemy and want him out. And convenient doesn't mean wrong, but. It does raise some question of how exactly are we supposed to be relating to popes, especially popes we might not like.
We're treating them like politicians, and that's
so even
those who have been supportive of Archbishop Vigano and his allegations, his so-called testimony, most of them with whom I've spoken or read say, "Gosh, I wish he had not called for the Pope to resign."
Yeah,
and that seemed to be to go a little bit too far, and it makes his office seem political. It makes like, well, we're taking a vote of no confidence on you, President Francis, and now you have to go.
I don't think you can call for popes to resign. It's not just unseemly. I think it's wrong because then we're going to develop a revolving door. The office stops being Vicar of Christ and starts being Vicar of whatever the fad of the moment is. The music means we have to take a break. We'll do that and come back to solve the riddle of Archbishop Vigano when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? In Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger, author Gary Machuda takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information, discourse on crucial issues, and a topical index, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Tomorrow on More to Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life. That's tomorrow on More to Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, year in review. Talking with Todd Egliaro, the director of publishing, and Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers magazine, here at Catholic Answers. A little conversation that erupted during the break. There is a way in which the papacy, the role of the Pope, it strikes me, I'm not going to speak for you all, as a little bit confused right now. We have Pope as celebrity, which seems to have started with Pope John Paul II. Pope as a commenter on the issues of the day, and underneath that, we still have the Pope as the main juridic voice of the Church, the one who settles disputes, so to speak, which is the ancient role of the See of St. Peter. It was a very reserved role. I mean, I don't think you would have seen Pope, Pope Pius IX behaving in the way modern popes do. There was a reserve to the men of the office out of respect to the office, but the office got reimagined by Pope John Paul II. Maybe all this Vigano stuff, but we'll get right back to it. But maybe we as Catholics, just as we maybe need to reevaluate what the modern bishop became, we need to be a little more circumspect about what we expect from a pope as well. Do we really want the celebrity constant comment pope, or do we want to go back to the pope that's the sign of unity and the final voice, the one who speaks to say, this is how we settle that issue. What do you want? Let me just ask you, what do you want? Do you like the celebrity pope?
No.
Oh, all right.
But as we were speaking earlier about how the world changes,
yeah,
and how the church changes in relationship to the world, it would be very difficult to go back to the days of Pius IX, given the overwhelming social media, you know, everybody tweeting and taking pictures.
Imagine Pius IX tweeting.
But even if a pope were to be, say, more circumspect than our current pope is, we would still be seeing him all the time, pictures of him,
things that
he said. It just,
yeah,
the culture, the world, the media has changed so that I think a pope becomes more of an object of interest and accessibility just based on him being in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too quick to lay it all at the feet of John Paul II, who certainly advanced that kind of papacy, but did so hand in hand with the changes in the world and the advances, particularly in communication technology.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a pope of his age.
He was.
Not just, right, a driver of it, but a product of it. And a 19th century pope or a 6th century pope, even up until probably after the war, after World War II, there wasn't a whole lot of change in well, I guess there was radio. I'm going to contradict myself, but I think that too. So not in addition to the opportunities that modern communication technology afforded John Paul II, there was a need of the day, and I think he was, and the kind of papacy that he lived was appropriate and needed for its age. He lit a fire that
right,
warmed the,
yeah,
hearts of many Catholics, and without ruminating too much over the global political and cultural conditions that he had to deal with too, I think a lot of it was appropriate. But the papacy today, a reflection of the ridiculousness of the culture, in things Tim was referring to, the need for constant updates on what you're doing and what you're eating and who you're with, and of course we have an analog to that in the White House too, don't we? I mean,
the same thing has, yeah, happened to the American presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine Calvin Coolidge behaving like presidents behave now? And I don't just mean the current president. It's been since John Kennedy, probably. The last reserved president was probably Eisenhower, and that was because he just wanted to golf. maybe that's an unfair. Okay, so all right, fair enough. I'm very cognizant of the fact that Saint Pope John Paul II did a really good job as Pope, but you can overdo even really good things.
Yeah, that's what I was clumsily trying to get to. I don't think you could go back. I don't think you could effectively fulfill the papal teaching office. I shouldn't say this. This is probably some kind of heresy to say it, but in the world that we have today, I think you've got to get out ahead of those technologies and use them for good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you could close the papal Twitter account. I don't think you could stop making radio broadcasts or giving interviews and that sort of thing. I don't think you should or could stop exercising moral leadership, even on areas that are not strictly ecclesial. So to talk about certainly not areas related to marriage or sexuality or even the environment,
yeah,
or economics or criminal justice, I think those things are within bounds. But you just say there's got to be a balance there to find someplace.
Okay. So because in my view, I guess to bring it back to Vigano, what happened all this year and calling for the resignation of the Pope and saying that the Pope knew these things and all that. I can remember when and people still do it. The CIA warned George Bush that Al-Qaeda wanted to attack American soil. And yet Al-Qaeda got to attack America. So that's – but you kind of think of these men and women in some cases in these very, very high positions. How much data is coming across your desk every day? How many warnings and complaints? And so to me, even if the Pope were told, I you have to filter some things out. You can't do that job without that. And if he were to come out and say, you know what, that was told to me, I didn't take it seriously, I blew it, I ask you for your forgiveness, then every single Catholic should line up, forgive, and move on. I don't know if that, the Pope seems defensive about it now, so I don't know if that's going to happen. But do you see what I'm saying?
I think that's a fair point in a vacuum, but I don't think that takes into account the particulars of the Vigan allegation, which is that these things are documented. They were known by Pope Francis's predecessor. They were acted upon. This is not one bit of data coming across in a stream of thousands.
Yeah.
So I think your principle is a good one, but I'm not sure if it applies.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Anything else on vegan? Oh, this continues to play out because, one more thing from 2018, the U.S. Catholic bishops were prepared to vote one morning in November about new processes for dealing with bishops who are miscreant. Is that too hard a word?
I don't think so.
Because I don't know what it means. I have to go look it up after the show. okay. So, and then Pope called. Right. He said, don't vote on this. That didn't look very good. Did you think? I thought that had a bad look.
I would have to agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
Todd's not saying anything. So I'm going to go with Todd thought that had a bad look too. And he wants to be reserved.
Yeah.
Is that okay, Todd? Can I make that?
Look, I think so. Optics aside.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore them, but you shouldn't make too much of them either. I get a leader of an institution wishing to make sure that the institution has a unified response to a serious issue. Yeah. And the way that it went about and the lateness of it and all that, it looks awful. And it is. It's not well organized.
Yeah.
But I'm the.
But it's minor compared to.
It's minor too when you think what exactly were the U.S. bishops going to accomplish between now and then anyway? So a wait of a couple of months to get ducks in a row. Now, of course, if getting ducks in a row means enforcing some kind of messaging discipline that prevents the truth from coming out, well, that would be a bad thing, or that downplays the gravity of these things, that would be a bad thing. But there's good ways that you can get unified messaging too, and I don't think that a delay of a few months, optics aside, is egregious.
Yeah, my take on it was that I always want to assume the best. So my take on it was it was a prudent thing for the Pope to do. He should have done it before.
Do it a week before.
The 11th and a half hour.
But who knows, again, who knows what information is getting through to him, at what timing. I mean, he's not sitting there watching CNN on, well, hey, what are the American bishops up to? Well, maybe he is. I don't know if he watches CNN or not, but I'm guessing he doesn't. But so now we have a February meeting of the whole world. Right. I'm starting to feel if something doesn't get shaken at that.
Yeah.
People are very angry, and there's not going to be infinite patience.
I do think it's going to be a tipping point. People are holding off for now. The angry people, the people that you know don't want to support their diocese anymore financially. I think there's sort of this is a waiting period.
Right.
I think what comes out of the February meeting is going to be very significant in terms of.
I can't imagine. Any, maybe this is a critique of my limited powers of imagination, but any kind of organizational or procedural tweak that would satisfy critics on this or any side of the aisle. I mean, in the United States, we've got the Dallas Charter, which seems to have been a really good thing, and on that level of procedure. Closed off a lot of opportunities for would-be abusers to do their thing. So could there be a church-wide analog to that? Okay. But as Tim said much earlier in this conversation, that so many of these allegations that are coming out in these attorneys general reports go back decades and decades, but because they're presented to us today, there's an immediacy to them. But you can't solve a 70-year-old problem that's already happened by making a strongly worded statement against it help me out here, Cy. What would you like to see? What would be a strong statement that everyone would get behind? I can't think of one myself.
I can't help you. I don't know.
It's fun being on the other side of this.
Yeah, no, I like being the interviewer. Could we stop this? I just think. The truth is, I probably if some names aren't named and some people aren't don't say, I mean, already we've had cardinals and archbishops resigning and bishops resigning and all that, but it's without something that feels more like, oh, we have dug down to the bone on this and the cancer is out.
And what's the bone? The bone starts in priestly formation.
Okay.
And it starts in vocations offices. It starts in – well, of course, it starts in the home, right? So that's that's the oven of vocations. But if you're of the opinion that the roots of the crisis are in a rotten cross-section of priests and a rotten cross-section of higher-up priests and bishops who empowered them and tolerated them and advanced them – then you've got to go back to the cradle on that. I have like four metaphors in this answer, but you have to go back to the beginnings, and you can't make a statement to the world and to the church that says we are going to completely gut and overhaul priestly discernment and vocational and training, so that we don't have priests of this and that sort that are the problem here. I mean, that's a long term answer, but I don't know who that would satisfy, because we want a soundbite and we want an expression of indignation and some kind of paperwork oriented answer. But the real answer probably has to take an entire generation to carry out.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there while we take our quick break. We're reviewing the year 2018 here at Catholic Answers Live. Don't forget, we have him sitting right here with us, the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine. So now would be a perfect time, while he's sitting here, for you to sign up to become a subscriber to Catholic Answers Magazine.
If you don't subscribe, we're going to shoot this editor.
That is not true, Tim.
You and your old references, Tim. You're losing your audience.
I'm a geezer.
Was that a Blazing Saddles reference?
What was that? National Lampoon.
Oh, National.
The dog with
the
gun to his head.
Yeah, we'll shoot this dog. Yeah. CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. It's better than National Lampoon. It's far more important than National Lampoon. But, man, it will keep you prepared. And I would even say it has the quality of an antidote to some of the nonsense in the world, and that antidote is much needed. Maybe you want to give it to your kids. Maybe you want to give it to your friends, seminarians, your spouse. Go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Get a free digital subscription.
And listen,
subscribe.
This current issue would make a great start to your subscription, because it's called the A to Z of Apologetics, and it gives you an overview for every letter of the alphabet of a key apologetical topic and a perfect explanation of it.
From antinomianism to Pope Zosimus. So, yeah.
Zosimus!
Zosimus! You gave it away!
Right,
Todd.
Back after this.
Was that?
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Catholic Radio, I believe, is the greatest tool for evangelization that the church has today. And I know this because we hear from people all over the world that tell us all the time they came to faith in Christ, in the Catholic Church, through Catholic Radio. Guy that lives right next door to you, he might not ask you about your Catholic faith, but he'll ask us. He'll call in and say, tell me about the Catholic Church.
Dr. David Anders thinks Catholic Radio is important. So should you.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teens spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're reviewing the year 2018 here as the year comes to a close. This hour, we are with Todd Agliolaro, Tim Ryland, who is interrupting me as I'm doing my comeback. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, since this is radio and you can't see this, that's a live band you hear every break.
Oh, yeah, the live band is great. Thank you,
playing,
guys.
Yeah, Sai's band is playing. He's playing lead guitar, and it's really hard to get them all to fade at the same time, but I just want to give kudos to them.
Yeah, it's a really, really good band. I'm not sure about the drummer, but the rest
Zosimus?
Of them. Not Zosimus. No, that guy, Nick, is a drummer.
I know. He's a good drummer.
I have been for months, I think it is months now, bugging Tim Staples about what the Z is in the A to Z of apologetics. And I have guessed every Z word. And on your first guess, you got it, Todd. And now I know. So that's what all that was before.
Courtesy of Trent Horn. Trent Horn gives us a little primer on the whole Zosimus.
I feel like I might have been kind of a downer for you two over the last 2 hours, because it was a tough year for Catholics, Christians, humans, and maybe for most of the non-human fold, for coral, for all kinds of things. There are signs of hope, however. I mean, not to be gushingly laudatory again, but a book like Inseparable, the fact that it exists is a good thing, but I do think it exists as part of a movement that we're seeing. Now, sometimes people in this building tell me, look, you're seeing a very small cross-section of the Catholic world here at Catholic Answers. It may not be there out there everywhere, but I do think with institutions like the Augustine Institute or Thomas Aquinas College or up the road from us, John Paul the Great – what's the one in New Hampshire? Is that also Thomas Aquinas?
Thomas More College.
Thomas More College. You know, just there's many, many more.
Not many more.
Well, I think there are, though. I think there are these I'm going to say, given the passing of one of our presidents this year, it looks like 1,000 points of light to me in many ways. Like when you think of Grace here in San Diego, whose last name is
Grace Williams.
Grace Williams, who's a young woman who's organizing other young women and has this ministry to people who have been trafficked in the sex trafficking business. I do think that there are signs of hope. And the reason I point to Inseparable is I think there are a group of young Catholics who are far enough removed from the Humanae Vitae and all that. You know, this was kind of their grandparents' thing, not even their parents', that they're looking at the church's teaching on sexuality and they're going, I think that might be right. I think I might be called to that. Do you share my sense that there are many, many good things going under the radar right now?
I think there's been a greening in the Catholic Church for 20 years, 25
really?
Years. I do. I think the homeschooling movement was part of that. I think, as you say, Thomas Aquinas College, University of Dallas, Steubenville, even places like Notre Dame, which we lost for a while, you can navigate your way to a very fine Catholic college education there. So I think
there's a lot of very good stuff going on at Notre Dame.
Yeah, there
like
seems
you hear
to be.
These things. Yeah. I don't know if there's probably bad stuff too. It's a big institution, but there's a lot of good things happening at Notre Dame. And I say that as a graduate of Boston College, my family is either Boston College or Notre Dame, and the Notre Dame people are horrible people in my family. But you do get the sense of a lot of really good things going on at Notre Dame.
So I am agreeing with you, but I think it started. It's a generational thing. I think you get far enough away from the truth, people recalculate. You know how old GPS used to stop and say recalculating when you'd go the wrong way?
Yeah, my GPS still does that. Okay. Tim. What do you think? It's an interesting phrase, a greening of the Catholic Church. Do you see any of that, or am I a Pollyanna?
Well,
or both could be true, I guess.
We've been talking about the second springtime since the 80s, so I mean, I don't think that's a new idea. Humanae Vitae seems to have been at the heart of it for a long time. I mean, I heard it suggested once many years ago, what do you call Catholics of a certain kind, of a certain, you know, dynamically orthodox, hopeful, faithful kind, and you know, orthodox Catholic or committed Catholic or real Catholic. Right. But one expression that I heard applied to them was the Humanae Vitae Catholic. It became kind of a shibboleth for a certain kind of fidelity.
What is a shibboleth? Could you explain that to me?
You're not Jewish?
No. Okay. What does he mean when he says shibboleth?
It's a word you don't want to say when you have a lisp on radio, that's for sure.
Okay, all right. You guys are so fancy. Okay, so I apologize.
No, that's all right.
So, I actually don't know.
It's a kind of code word. It's from the Bible.
Okay.
And I forget the circumstances of it, but people were instructed to identify the enemy by the way they pronounce the word shibboleth.
Right.
We had almost anybody else in this building here in the room with us, they could tell us chapter and verse on that.
I know, right. And I didn't even know.
We're in the literary wing of the family business here. So, but why do I mention this? Because at the core of adherence to Humanae Vitae and celebration of it is a kind of pugnacity or a courage against the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been for me an identifying mark of a certain kind of Catholic that mm-hmm. sees that's filled with hope, that isn't negative, that isn't cynical, that isn't filled with bitterness about all the evils of the world, but nonetheless sees that in the world is not our true home, and that that the church and the world will always be kind of locked in a kind of combat. And over the last century, the chief battleground has been sex. And
Without question.
And so not to belittle any other moral or doctrinal teaching of the church or spirituality or anything else that's good in our faith, but that seems to be the area where you could really locate, where do you line up? And so when you line up those kinds of people, I think those tend to be the same cross section that teach at the Steubenvilles and that start the Catholic Answers magazines and mm-hmm. start apostolates like Catholic Answers or, mm-hmm. or any number of dozens of others we could name. So if that's what Tim meant by greening, and I think it is, then I agree.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, greening could mean to me getting younger, or it could mean kind of getting fuller and juicier and full of life.
Yeah. To me, it means like after the winter, the roots of the grass become green. They start pushing up through the soil.
Right. I'm not always, in traveling and doing what we do for this job, you end up in different parishes, different times. It's not always edifying what's going on in Catholic churches on Sundays. But I have to say, I think it's better than what was going on in the 70s and the 80s. And liturgy is very, very important to the future of – it's important to everything. I don't know why I said to the future. But there's a little bit of greening going on there too as well in liturgy. Would you agree or –
It's certainly better than it was. Speaking as someone who
well, it's not the high middle ages
at mass.
Someone who perpetrated guitar music throughout the 70s and 80s in mass, I'll be doing a lot of time in purgatory for that. But I'd say it's not. You don't run across as execrable of music as you did 25, 30 years ago. Generally.
And but not only that, there are some people who are certainly with the Benedict XVI Institute up the road here in San mm-hmm. Francisco, there mm-hmm. are. People who are taking seriously the idea that the liturgy should be beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and the problem with the liturgy being too connected with the culture, the problems are probably myriad, but one of them is pop culture is really not capable of beauty of much depth because that it wouldn't be pop anymore if it was. And so I'm not convinced by the people who say, well, if you could make it a little more fun at church, then the kids would come. The liturgy needs to be beautiful. I think we've had the argument, and I do think beauty is winning little by little. Churches are more beautiful, much more beautiful than mm-hmm. they were in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And liturgies themselves, little by little.
There's undoubtedly been renewal with architecture, with music,
yeah.
with translations, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. Adherence to rubrics, with other kinds of liturgies, whether it's the extraordinary form or the Anglican use yeah. liturgy or the many kinds of Eastern Catholic liturgies that we've embraced now. And I think we have Pope Benedict to thank for helping to push that along.
Yeah.
I think liturgy was much more important to him than it was to his predecessor or his successor.
But quite a few African bishops as well. I'm thinking of Bishop Serra now, mm-hmm. but even before him, Cardinal Arinze, and mm-hmm. I don't know why that is. I'm not sure what they're getting in the seminaries there or what their education is, but it does seem like another sign of hope. There's a great deal of good going on in Africa. It almost seems like Africa might avoid some of the uglier secularizations that the world has tried. But
well, the old saw is they're going to be sending us missionaries soon. So
have you been to church lately?
I think they are. Well, yes.
Todd Egliolaro, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers and the editor, the creator of Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humanae Vitae. Thank you for a very fine couple of hours, Todd.
Hey, it was great, Si. Thanks.
See you in 2019. And Tim Ryland, the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, the finest Catholic magazine in El Cajon. And
thank
other places.
You,
thank you very much, Tim, for coming in.
Always Merry Christmas, Cy, and everybody else out there.
Merry Christmas. We'll see you next time, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.